Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The New Hampshire Supreme Court unanimously reversed Adam Montgomery's second-degree murder conviction in the death of 5-year-old Harmony Montgomery. Yeah, I know. Not because anyone found new evidence, not because anyone is claiming he's innocent, because the trial court let the murder charge ride alongside a separate assault charge in front of the same jury, something that actually the defense of Adam Montgomery wanted. Well, the Supreme Court said the stronger case contaminated the weaker one, and now guess what? He's going to get a new trial. This is a ruling about trial mechanics, and there's no one better to talk to and walk us through what happened here than defense attorney extraordinaire and host of the podcast Defense Diaries, Bob Mata, to help break all this down. I know we were both reacting to this the other day on Twitter. The Supreme Court said they're going to be trying the murder case and the assault case. Obviously, the assault case was tied to this, but they said no. It was prejudicial to have them next to each other tried at the same time, even though Adam's team asked for it. For people who don't speak courtroom, what does prejudicial actually mean? And how do the mechanics of this work? Again, considering the Adam Montgomery camp is the one who wanted these combined into one trial.
Yeah. I mean, in plain English, prejudicial is, you know, in the legal sense, doesn't just mean this hurts the defense. It means that every good piece of the prosecution's evidence hurts the defense. And that point of it, like legally prejudicial, means the jury used evidence for a purpose that the law forbids. And propensity is what I'm talking about. And, you know, for instance, you know, he beat her in July, which we obviously had evidence of, which is why I hate that guy probably more than any defendant. Yeah. I've got, like, in recent memory, and there's some horrific, horrific defendants we've seen in recent memory, but this guy with that adorable, beautiful little girl.
Yeah.
You know, but him beating her in July and then turning around saying, so he's the kind of man who would have beat her to death in December. You can't do it. It goes to propensity. It's one of the things that you can't use prior bad acts for. So, you know, the law, for lack of a better term, is basically allergic to that. And you can't convict somebody of crime B just because they've committed crime A. And also because he's a shitbag. So ultimately, you know, this thing landed on the fact that the charges were misjoined. They should have been severed. They shouldn't have been tried together. And ultimately they were. And it was a miscalculation by both the prosecutor and the judge, in the sense that they knew what evidence they were going to be presenting and that they knew what impact that would have on the jury. You know, it's like you can't show the types of injuries that Harmony sustained in the July occurrence and not expect that to bleed into the jury's mindset in terms of hating this guy, you know? And, you know, we refer to it as bootstrapping. You know, when you bootstrap another another case onto another case in order to bolster that second case. It's just, it's not allowable in the law. As much as I hate this ruling, you know, and I do, because I mean, that piece of shit didn't even show up for his own trial. He wouldn't come out of his jail cell, but I'm sure we'll get into that. So, but
yeah,
that's essentially what prejudice in this context means.
Help me understand the arc, Bob. I you know, because to me, again, I don't speak courtroom either. How do you then do it? Because all the prior things this individual did as a human being lead to who he was that actually did the even more horrendous thing of killing her. So, I mean, how do you separate those when it's all part of the whole of who he is?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, what you're talking about is propensity. Like,
right,
the whole of who he is, you can't use prior bad acts to show propensity. Like, the dog, it's just not allowed in the law, you know.
Don't we see that at the places, though? I mean,
not if they can avoid it. You know, I hear what you're saying. I mean,
like here's an example, just to try and throw in it. Like, okay, so Corey Richens' case, the sandwich beforehand.
Right.
You know, they're like, oh, he got sick and he survived. I know that. I mean, that was up. They were arguing whether that should be in or not. It obviously stayed. It was a separate charge. But, I mean, the evidence, it was kind of there. Kind of not. Kind of at the same place. I mean, so we do see it in other cases. I guess what is really getting me on this is, and I totally understand your argument and the propensity and how that works, and I get it. But the fact that they are the ones who wanted these two things connected, that's what gets me on it. It wasn't the state that said, we're going to connect these. You have no, you know, they argued for it. The Montgomery side argued for it. Or Adams side argued for it. That's the part that gets me. Okay. You asked for it. You got what you wanted. And now you're using this as a strategy to get another trial. Was this part of the strategy all along on the part of the defense?
I mean, if it was, it was a bizarre strategy.
You know,
I mean, like, ultimately, I think that they had to realize that in let me take a step back. I'm concerned about the retrial on the murder case because there is no additional evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what we saw is what we saw in terms of the evidence that they're going to have. And in the second trial, they're not going to be able to use the evidence that they used in the first trial with respect to the July occurrence of him beating his child because she was wetting herself, you know, and showing the injuries that occurred. You know, as to your Corey Richens kind of analysis, I mean, with that particular set of circumstances, what we're talking about there is like a common scheme or plan, you know, like that's one of the things you could show. She had tried to do it before. Like, this is the evidence. She tried to poison him before with the sandwich. So that would fall under the you know, the reasons that you can use 404B in terms of, you know, motive, opportunity, you know, common scheme or plan. Those are things that the courts have said, yes, you can use this type of prior bad act testimony or evidence for, you know, in a separate case. And, mm-hmm. and in this particular situation, that's just they couldn't get that to fit in any of the allowable aspects of being able to use 404B. So, you know, I'm concerned because of the whole Kayla issue, you know, you know, as to whether or not they're going to be able to prove this against him, you know? So,
I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, the assault evidence was rock solid, multiple independent witnesses. The murder evidence rested almost entirely on Kayla Montgomery's testimony. Yeah. Kayla Montgomery, not a great witness at the end of the day. You know, I mean, how big is the gap between those two evidence pools, you know, and why does that matter so much here?
Well, I mean, it matters massively because in theory, she could be the one who actually committed the crime. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's ultimately where this thing's going to lay. I mean, if you're the defense attorney for Adam Montgomery, you're pointing the finger at Kayla, mm-hmm. you know, because she was the last one with Harmony. So, you know, I mean, and that's obviously problematic for the state, you know, because you have a situation, well, did she die as a result of what Adam had done before he got out of the vehicle, or did something happen in the interim? You know, and was that at Kayla's hand? And, you know, the problem with Kayla is, like you said, she's a bad witness. You know, she already pled guilty to perjury. She cut a deal. And, you know, the bottom line is she was in that car, too.
Yeah. And I want to get into to that end of it in our next segment here. But yeah, go ahead, Robin.
I'm still struggling with this one just because of the whole prior acts thing to me. So, Bob, what's the difference between like Stephen Stearns and the horrendous murder of Missy Soto, and, you know, with SA involved with that little girl, and this, you know, because they had to draw in his horrendous behavior in that arc in his life, because it drew to the horrendous acts he did. You know, it 1 + 2 + 3 equals, you know, that. What's the difference between those types of cases and this?
Well, I think in the Stearns case, there was more evidence that, you know, he was the last one with her.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so what they're saying is, but for the fact that they put in this assault evidence, they wouldn't have been able to convict him.
If he had been the last one with her, would all of the prior bad act evidence be landing differently? Would the Supreme Court have looked at this differently had he just been the last person there? Is the fact that she was there, that's what the Supreme Court is saying? Yeah, but.
Right. I think it would have been more akin to the Stearns case. Right.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's the primary difference is Kayla. You know, I mean, like the fact that Kayla was in that vehicle, it's not as clear cut. So with Stearns, he's the last one with her. And, you know, they were able to geolocate where he was.
Right.
So ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, the appellate court's going to look at that and say, all right, well, even if we found that this was an error, we're going to find that it was harmless error because the other evidence that existed in the case was strong enough to lead the jury to the verdict that it finally reached. So with here, the appellate court just didn't feel that was the case. They were like, look, if we take out this assault evidence, what do they really have on him other than he's a giant piece of shit? You know, which, again, you can be a giant piece of shit. It doesn't necessarily mean you're a murderer.
So then who do you go after for the murder?
Well, I mean, they're going to go after Montgomery again. And, you know, that's why I'm saying I'm nervous about this murder case because it's not clear cut.
Well, I know. I get it. But it's just so befuddling to me that you know, death needs accountability, and who else? I mean, so just, I mean, okay, so they'll get him on an assault. I mean, what the, okay. And yet there's no justice for the murder on that. It's
our system. It's interesting because, like, on the surface, it's so angry. It's so easy to get angry at this because it almost feels like our system says, yes, context is important some of the time. But other times it's not, and it's such a gray area because a lot of times, Bob, it comes down to the interpretation of the law and who's interpreting it.
100%. I mean, that's the nutshell of what the law is.
Yeah.
I mean, in every criminal case you're ever going to watch, you're going to see two different sides interpreting the same law and set of facts in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's literally what the law is. It's literally why cases go to trial, because two sides are arguing very different opinions as to what law should be applied, how the law should be applied, and what the facts and the evidence show in regard to that particular case. And, you know, I mean, that's every single trial you'll go to. I mean, most cases plead out.
Yeah.
And when they do, it's because one side, typically the defense, can't find a way to effectively argue that the facts and the evidence that exist in that case can be applied or looked at another way. You know, so at that point, you're looking as the defense attorney, you say, well, you know, look, man, they got some pretty strong evidence. There's not going to be any way to kind of twist this thing into a position where we're going to be able to make a cogent argument that it could have happened a different way than what the state is saying happened. And in those cases, you're saying, you know, they got you, you know, so what I need to be doing as your attorney is trying to, and again, like I say this all the time, every case isn't murder, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different crime that, you know, that, that may or may
how,
not.
How expected was this, you think, Bob? I mean, when you were watching this case originally, did you go, this is going to be a challenging one? Or, I mean, or do you think they stretched to make this happen?
I was concerned, you know, when I watch it, because going into watching that trial, I wasn't aware of the whole Kayla factor in the sense that I didn't realize just how involved she was in that relationship between, you know, Adam and his daughter, you know, and because I didn't heavily research that case going into it. So I kind of went into it blind, and I hadn't been paying attention to any of the pretrial stuff that had gone on when, as Tony had said, the defense had originally requested the joinder, you know, but then they later on tried to undo it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so they weren't dying on that hill, right. You know, what you're allowed to do. There's nothing.
You can change your mind. Yeah.
Totally.
I think one of the biggest things in a case like this, when you see a decision like this made by the court, is exactly what we were talking about earlier, of how this is all up to interpretation by the individual that's interpreting it. And we know that, but I don't think it resonates with most people, because it's not what they do for a living. You know, they're lay people, but once you see it, it's like you realize just how much the court system works that way. And that's why people get so outraged so often. We're like, well, this case over here went this way. This one's just like this. And it's not. Yeah. It's interpretation in both ways. It's almost like the adult criminal version of, well, my parents allow me to get away with this over here, and those ones don't. And it's all about who's controlling the rules and who's interpreting them. And that is just, it's how it works, for better or for worse. That's what we're dealing with.
Why? You know, it's like out of all the things you could be doing right now that appellate courts could be doing and judges could be doing, you know, with all the bandwidth that can suck up your time. I'm just curious, like, why did this case come to that? What are your thoughts on that, Bob? It's like, why this one and not something else?
Yeah. I mean, when you're kind of looking at this case initially, the timing of the defense asking for it to, you know, for all the charges to be joined together, and they try it in one particular trial, and I'm guessing here, but I think initially it was probably early on in the discovery process, they were probably thinking, all right, you know, this thing's going to be a mess for them, because they knew about the whole Kayla situation, and they're hoping, look, we'd rather just try this at one time, have it turn into a big mess between, you know, Kayla, the assault that happens months prior, and as opposed to giving them two bites of the apple and asking for severance and saying, okay, well, we'll have them try these charges then, and then we'll do the murder later, you know, because at that point you're giving the state two bites at the apple. But then the discovery keeps coming back in. And then as soon as they're seeing just how powerful the assault evidence is and how emotion evoking that is going to be for a jury, they realize, nah, we can't do this, because if we don't sever these things, they're immediately going to impute the guilt from the assault onto the murder, and you're going down. And, you know, by that time, they couldn't undo it. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like, had they not made that move to undo it in terms of saying, like, you know, we're fine with these cases being joined, had they not done it, it would have been waived for the purposes of appeal. And we're not sitting here right now. But because they did try to have them, you know, severed at that point, it created the issue for appeal, which ultimately the appellate court ended up ruling on.
So Bob, put on your you always have it on, your defense attorney hat for Adam. You were convicted of it, you're in jail, you think this or part of it's behind you, you're moving on to other stuff. So and I know what you're morally and ethically, you know, you're sworn to, but how do you go back in and do this again for someone who you know is a complete dirtbag? I mean, what's your ultimate goal that you're trying to do now if you're his lawyer?
I mean, if you're his lawyer, you're pointing the finger at Kayla. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Because she, like, they're not going to be able to establish exactly when she died.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you have this situation where Adam's out of the vehicle and she's still in the vehicle with Harmony. And there's that time frame there where you're not going to be able to show that, say, for instance, Kayla smothered her, just right. put her hand over her mouth and ended her life, you know, while he's out of the car.
Right.
I mean, who knows what's going on in that woman's mind?
How do you get there? Yeah. To beyond a reasonable doubt.
That's tricky, man.
It is
tricky.
And that's what we're going to be getting into in our next segment here. Your thoughts so far in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.